Welcome into another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We're rolling through the team previews, and joining me to cover the Tampa Bay Rays today is none other than Chuck Anderson. Chuck, what's up, dude?
Not a whole lot. I'm like everyone else. I'm ready for this offseason to really kick in and have all the big free agents sign and get everything set. But these last couple years, that's not been how it's gone. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached on the Twitter machine at Just Chucking It. And I'm excited to talk about the Rays with perhaps our biggest Rays enthusiast on the FWFB staff, Mike Werner, one of our founding fathers as well.
Yes, I'm definitely a fan of the Rays. I'll give you that. But yeah, you can catch me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. And let's roll through this team, at least for the 2019 season, as it stands right now, mid-January. it could definitely change a lot. You know the Rays, and they obviously have a roster that fluctuates year in and year out. I think the top person to talk about running through the lineup and everything is Tommy Pham. Once he was traded to Tampa last season, he just kind of lit it up. He became a really good fantasy asset, top 30-ish hitter the rest of the way. Again, this is post-trade from St. Louis. Right now, a pretty economical draft cost. What's your thoughts on Pham for this year, Chuck?
Well, I think if you want to go, through and get some guys that are not sky high in their draft position, but could still really help you on steals, I think Tommy Pham makes a ton of sense. He's always been a bit of a headstrong guy. I mean, the article that came out about how he felt disrespected about falling back in the pecking order amongst the St. Louis prospects. He's got this, he's got this attitude. He needs to play with a chip on his shoulder, and that seems to fit in perfectly with the Rays psyche overall. I love Tommy Pham this year. I will own multiple shares of Tommy Pham before the drafting season is over. He has power upside. He's got speed upside. This offense definitely has more upside and more punch than it's had in recent years. So I'm pretty excited about Tommy Pham and his prospects for this season.
Top 70 in ADP thus far. The only one thing I will say about Pham that's not really fantasy related is he just straight up put the Rays fans on blast on SiriusXM radio. He essentially just was like, coming from a fandom that is the St. Louis Cardinals over to Tampa Bay, he's like, this team won 90 games and, nobody comes out and sees them. It's pretty much horseshit. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. And while the Rays fan base is awful at large, I'm also, me along with a lot of people that I know are, I think, insanely great baseball fans as well as Rays fans. So it's kind of insulting to hear that, but he does have a point is kind of what I'm getting at. As far as his fantasy stock for this year, being a top 70 pick, I think that is worth the gamble. That's not much of a discount from last year. And, I know people that drafted him last season probably expected a little bit more, but he did do fairly well. And then his Statcast metrics were really good as well as the season went on, especially with the Rays. He upped his barrel percentage, his exit velocity, all of his hard hit stats, all of that stuff went up. And the Rays last year were the top team in baseball in stolen base attempts per game. It didn't result in much stolen base output for him once he got traded to the Rays, only two stolen bases the last few months of the season before September where he knocked in five. But I think overall, he's going to be a 2020 candidate with a pretty decent batting average, and that's all you can really ask for from him. Let's move it over to Austin Meadows. He's probably one of the most exciting candidates for the Rays for me. I will say, since they were able to sign Avisail Garcia, I'm a little bit worried about Meadows and his playing time, at least to start the season, but I still think he's a really good get for 2019. What about you?
I think Austin Meadows is somebody that they're pretty heavily invested in. They got it was part of the ample return that they got back in the trade for Chris Archer last year. He was a highly touted first-round draft pick. There's a lot to like about the potential that he has. The hardest part is to go back and look and see that he's really never played a full, a full palette of games very regularly in his minor league career, which started back in 2013. And last year his numbers, having that over 20% strikeout rate when you don't project yet at this point in your career to be a big power hitter seems like it's kind of troublesome. And as you said, I think Avisail Garcia is is penciled in to DH mostly. That's certainly what Roster Resource thinks is going to happen. And I do believe that Meadows gets a shot, but they're so deep that it makes me wonder exactly all the different ways that it could go. And that's something you're going to hear me mention throughout this podcast.
Yeah, I'm on board just based on draft cost alone. I just think that, you know, somebody that's going to steal a good amount, and health is always going to be the biggest question mark with Meadows, and it's been a problem here for the last couple of years. But when he was given an opportunity with Pittsburgh last year, when Starling Marte went down, he did really well in a very short amount of time. And, you know, us as fantasy owners, we were hoping that he would be able to kind of carve out a role the whole entire season in 2018. Unfortunately, he really didn't get that opportunity. But once he was traded to the Rays, he did find some at-bats. He hit .250 in the month of September with a home run, a stolen base, and 4 RBIs. Not much to glean from that sample size, but always been considered a top prospect. Injuries have always gotten in the way, much like you said, but the Rays and their propensity to run gives me a little bit more, you know, upside for him than, you know, most clubs that he could have landed on. So only 24 years old, doesn't walk a ton, and does strike out a bit as well, but I do like the power metrics. I like his speed. I think that, you know, for fantasy, especially 5x5 formats, he is what you're looking for. And, you know, right now not going very high as well. He's only, you know, going as 180th pick overall in NFBC drafts. There's been almost 80 drafts to this point, so pretty fair number at that cost. I think the next guy that we need to talk about is Kevin Kiermaier, because he has slipped in drafts all the way down to outside the top 350 picks. And this is a guy that the last couple of years has been a, you know, 150, 170 overall pick. Right now he's 312. I understand last year was completely and utterly awful. I mean, there was just like no avenue in which you felt good about having Kevin Kiermaier on your team. And when you look at some of the advanced metrics too, nothing really went his way. I mean, there's just nothing here that was really positive about 2018. But going outside the top 300 is going to get a full you know, kind of repertoire of at-bats and going to play unless he gets injured, which has happened in the past. I just don't really see the reason for him to go outside the 300. What about you?
Yeah, 300 seems like a pretty steep drop-off. Now, the one thing I would say is when you see those ADPs now, most of the drafts have been draft and holds, where durability is a bigger liability in as far as draft position is concerned. I mean, if you own him, you can't think of it like I'm drafting Kevin Kiermaier plus his replacement in draft and hold formats. So I do think you'll see his ADP rise. You know, he didn't ever really have... He never had as many problems striking out as he did last year. That nearly 25% K rate was pretty bad. And, you know, his walk rate was down as well, which wasn't ideal. I have this interesting metric in my mind that as I look over stats for all these different players, like the last player we mentioned, Austin Meadows, had a higher BABIP than he had an OBP, which I think is not ideal, to say the least. Of course, it was a small sample size last year for Meadows. But the point being is that his Kiermaier's 275 BABIP and 282 OBP last year, whenever they get close together like that, it scares me a little bit. But like I said, if I was in a regular 14-team league and I could pick him up in the reserve draft, and if he gets hurt, I can move him into an IR spot and pick somebody else up. There's something to be said. This is still the sleeper from a couple years ago that we thought, boy, if he just stays healthy for a full year, maybe this is the late guy that we can get 15 to 20 stolen bases from and 15 to 20 home runs from. It just hasn't happened yet. And usually these guys, as soon as we stop being on them, that's when they have a tendency to suddenly bust out. So maybe this is the year for Kiermaier. And you mentioned it perfectly. He's got a glove that both keeps him in the lineup and seemingly at times keeps him off the field. Because he gets to balls that he can't get to, runs through walls, this, that, and everything else. You know, gets to balls that no one else could get to. And so it's a give and take as far as the glove's concerned. But if he just managed, boy, if you told me I was going to get 135 games from Kiermaier, I would be happy with him in, you know, in as a low 200 draft position versus a mid 300 draft position.
Yeah, my opinion is since four of the last 5 years, he has not eclipsed 400 at bats in a season. I think it's fair to say that he's not going to eclipse that this year. You talk about his hustle, quoting the old fantasy focus mantra of, nothing good comes from hustling. I mean, that's exactly right with Kiermaier. He is off the field or held off the field for usually a month at least of each and every season because of the way he goes about the game. And I appreciate it as a Rays fan, but just keeping it strictly fantasy, in his range of outcomes, he's an automatic double-digit stolen base guy. He's done that each of the last four seasons, with the lowest being 10 stolen bases last year. He was 16, 18, and 21 the 3 years prior. So, I mean, just looking at the range of outcomes, you're going to get double-digit stolen bases, even if he is injured the majority of the year. So it really comes down to whether you think he's going to give you double-digit power and a plus 250 batting average, and I would say he's not a 217 batting average guy. Batting average fluctuates in and out of each year. He was a 270 plus hitter against righties in three of the 4 years prior, and last year he hit 232 against them. I mean, I just think that chances are he will start to correct some things in the batting average enough for him to be well worth the 300 spot. I would take him as a 220, 230-ish pick, maybe even earlier if I felt like I needed speed on my roster. But in the range of outcomes, if he were to go over 450 at-bats, I think he could steal 20 bases again like he did in 2016. And I think that he could hit 270-ish with 15 home runs. So, I mean, the upside is there, and I think that there's just enough in his profile, still only 29 years old, for him to be a really good fantasy asset. So that's my take on Kiermaier. Somebody that I'd want to talk about, just because he was more of an accumulator last year, was Joey Wendell. I don't think there's a lot of analysis here, but he did, steal 16 bases last year, 7 home runs, hit 300. Really good at, making contact as well in a just kind of a landscape of baseball where everybody is so about hitting home runs or stealing bases and then not really caring about contacts. Wendell kind of does the opposite. He makes a ton of contact. It's not necessarily that hard. He's just barely above league average. Hits the ball on the ground a lot, 46%, but overall just kind of a accumulator when it comes to fantasy and more of an AL-only option. But what are your thoughts on Wendell for this year?
Well, I remember when Joey Wendell got traded from Cleveland.
Cleveland
out to Oakland, and there was a lot of negativity about his sort of prospect value at the time, that he wasn't worth the price that, that Oakland paid for him. Anyway, since Joey Wendell last year, I mean, there's a lot of things in his hit profile that really looked up. I mean, he was far more patient last year. He had a 16.5% drop in his swing percentage. He had 25% more medium or hard contact than he had the year before. He did have a 33.3% home run to fly ball rate, which obviously he doesn't really seem like he's that type of a hitter. But there's a lot to like about it. I mean, if you wanted to get negative, he did have a career high 353 BABIP last year. I think the big thing is that he's going to have multi-position eligibility. This is a team in the Rays, this was one thing I really wanted to bring up to you, because as closely as you follow them, it seems to be a team that thinks there's a market inefficiency in sort of post-hype sleepers. And Wendell, struggled a lot when he was in Oakland. His year was a lot better last year, far better last year in Tampa. And sometimes you think, well, if you're always looking over your shoulder and you don't know if you're going to get at bats, then maybe you tighten up a little bit and you can't relax and just be yourself and play. And last year, when the Rays gave him a chance to play and just sort of said, fly away and be free, I think maybe the Daniel Robertson injury towards the end of the year might have helped as well, because I noticed that he really had a scorching second half. So, this is a guy now that this fits the Rays mold. This is a guy who kind of is from the land of lost toys, if you will. And I'm fairly excited about him as somebody I could grab late. Looks like he has third base eligibility in leagues as well as second base on the way. So I'm pretty happy about Joey Wendell as a late game play this year in almost any format. I wouldn't be afraid to reserve him in shallower leagues. I wouldn't be afraid to take him as one of those guys that can help you cover roster spots in the larger NFBC formats.
Yeah, he's gonna play. He has a pretty good glove as well, and he's gonna be on a strong side of a platoon at least at second base. You also have somebody like Matt Dovey, who we can, you know, cover a little bit as well, who doesn't have the greatest durability history. So he very well could be mixing and matching. We don't know the health of everyone. There is a few, you know, prospects on their way, and you know, the most notable that is closest is probably Christian Arroyo, who we don't need to talk about. We'll let Matt and Justin kind of cover that, but Arroyo is obviously a candidate to play second base if something were to happen to Wendell, or just be, you know, another side of the platoon. Daniel Robertson's a guy you mentioned, and you know, somebody that made a lot of really good gains last year. I think he's a pretty decent AL only sleeper as well. We don't have to dive in on him, but in short, I think that Wendell is a pretty strong bat. I think he has some more upside in there than we saw last season. I think he has enough power to hit double-digit home runs, and I think that the speed is legit as well. He's not a burner out there, but with the amount that the Rays steal and the amount that they gave him the green light, I think that there's every opportunity for him to have double-digit stolen bases again. And he's obviously somebody that, you know, just based on the minor leagues alone and his, you know, small major league sample at this point, he's pretty good with batting average. I think it's safe to say that he's a good hitter. So yeah, overall, I think Wendell's a pretty solid bat. Definitely meant for more deeper leagues and AL onlys, but despite that, I think that he's a pretty strong play for fantasy this year. The next guy I want to talk about is indeed Avisail Garcia, somebody that's been somewhat just mediocre to this point in his career. Never really been able to put it all together. Is this just kind of who he is at this point?
You know, it's hard for me to imagine. He had a little power outburst recently, but it sure just doesn't look like the underlying, you know, dynamics of his hit tool really say that anything dramatically has changed. So it's hard to imagine him as more of kind of a streaky average hitter, and he's going to be in a pretty tough home park traditionally for power. You know, he strikes out more than you want for the rest of the hit profile. So I'm not real excited about Avisail Garcia this year. I mean, he has had better BABIPs than he had last year. Last year was a down year, a 271 BABIP year for him. But again, his OBP was only 281. So that'll tell you that he's not walking a whole lot. He's striking out a whole lot. And sort of sold out maybe for power would be one way to look at it. I don't know. He's, you know, this day and age, if you're topping out at, you know, the 15 to 19 home run plateau, if everything goes right, seems like a little scary. I mean, he did have 19 home runs in only, you know, 93 games with the White Sox last year, so maybe I'm selling him short. I'm curious as to how you feel about it, being the Rays fan.
Well, I think last season was kind of a wash just because he was injured on and off throughout the year, and while he did put up 19 home runs, I think the batting average is about as low as you'll ever see him have in his career. And you know, his contact was the worst of his career as well, almost a 30% strikeout rate. He's never been somebody that's made tremendous contact, but just his plate skills took a downturn last season compared to where they had been the previous couple of years. BABIP went down as well, which I usually don't like to lean on, but regardless, I think that, you know, he did show a boost, a pretty sizable boost in his power metrics. His home run to fly ball rate jumped up to 21% last year. Even if he keeps relatively close to the same home run to fly ball rate, he should, and his fly ball rate overall goes down because he did have a career high fly ball rate last season. Even if that drops as well, he still is going to be in the ballpark of 20 home runs. Not amazing for fantasy, but I do think we should expect a regression to the mean in his batting average, in which I think that while he won't hit 327 that he did in 2017, I think that 280, 270 is definitely within the realm of possibilities here. Yeah, so I don't know where he's going to hit in the lineup. I know Roster Resource right now has him hitting cleanup. I don't know if that's the best spot for him. I feel like he should probably be hitting seventh or so, maybe sixth. I mean, he's pretty good against lefties in his career, so I could definitely see him hitting cleanup against lefties. 302 in his career, 16 home runs, you know, 380 BABIP against lefties, and you know, about the same contact rate against righties and lefties throughout his career. But I don't think he's underwhelming for the most part, but at the same time, he is decent enough at the skills that you need, batting average and pop, that can help you in fantasy, albeit probably not that much. Still only 28. Maybe the Rays can find something in his swing. I've seen crazier things with what they've done with some players' swings. So, I mean, does he have the power with a slight kind of change to his swing plane to hit 25 home runs? Sure. Do I think that that's what the Rays got him for? Probably not.
Yeah, he fits the bill again. He's a guy that, you know, has sort of prospect fatigue has grown at the major league level. You know, he was considered like a mini Miggy when he came over from Detroit. And, you know, now we've had these years where he's either been injured or he's sort of been a middling player the whole time. And the other thing that we'll have to watch is if he does DH nearly full time, because like we said, there's a whole slew of people who can play who could considerably play the outfield for the Rays this year, that we'll have to see how he adjusts to just DHing as well. I don't mind him as an end game gamble at all. I mean, he's had really good stretches in the big leagues before, so maybe we're selling him a little short since he's not nearly as old as he seems to be in our mind because he came up at such a tender age.
I think that he, you know, in 2017, roto dollar wise, he almost earned $30, and that's because he hit .330 with a .380 on base percentage, 18 home runs, you know, 75 RBIs and runs as well. I think that he could match the runs and RBIs numbers just if he plays all season with the Rays. The batting average won't be there, and the home runs could be. I think it 18 is probably fair. I think right now I have him at 17 in my projection. So, you know, a handful of stolen bases, that's not a zero either. He just doesn't. He's more of an end game, you know, in the leagues that you and I play in, the depth of those leagues, Avisail Garcia is a play, and if people that are listening to this that are in 10-team leagues, then, you know, kind of look the other way, because he's not that type of player. Let's talk about Willy Adames, who I love. He's one of my favorite Rays. He is part of the future of this team. Last season, pretty underwhelming. While he hit .280-ish, the contact does not reflect that. 33% strikeout rate, 67% contact. He definitely was helped by a .380 BABIP. 52% ground ball rate tells me that he needs to get more balls in the air. The line drive percentage was low. He's just not making good enough contact at this time. His hard contact was below league average by a fair margin. The Rays did let him steal, so he had 10 home runs and 6 stolen bases and less than 300 at-bats. But for this year, I'm out. I think that this is a year that I need to kind of assess him again and see if he starts to make some gains in certain places, mainly his plate skills and his batted ball profile as well. But right now he's being taken at .208. I would rather swap Adames and Kevin Kiermaier and feel better about that. We also should mention Avisail Garcia is going 390th right now, and he will definitely go up because he hadn't had a job to this point. But even then, I still think Garcia is probably the better bet over Adames. What about you?
Well, my problem with gauging a player like this is that while I really do like Adames, I like some of the sort of endgame shortstop plays a great deal this year. It depends on how the starts of my drafts go as to if I end up with a share of Adames, which certainly would not bother me. I mean, it's so hard to judge middle infield anyway. And now we're talking about a guy who's 23 years old, and this past year was the highest home run rate of his career. You know, and it's a mixed bag all the way through. 29% strikeout rate, but a 9.6% walk rate. 9.6% walk rate is great for a 23-year-old, you know, a 22-year-old in the bigs. You know, and he's been a high BABIP guy anyway. Not that the .378, .380 on-base percentage that you mentioned isn't a little bit frightening. But in his last 3 years in the minors, they were all double-digit stolen base seasons. And so that leads me to believe that he's going to offer us a stolen base floor because of how much the Rays run. And so if I get to that end game and I'm like, well, you know, I can only shore up a couple positions, and which one don't I want to shore up? If I feel like I'm going to get Adames where he's going, I'm quite a bit higher on him this year than you are. I think middle infield offers the most risk and the most reward, as far as young players are concerned, as to what can happen with them. Just look at, you know, Xander Bogaerts. Look at, you know, all the stuff that we've gotten from Dustin Ackley. I mean, we can go on and on and on about middle infielders and exactly how we don't know what they're going to do. Remember, Andrelton Simmons had a huge power outbreak 1 year. Then he, you know, was down in the dumps batting for a couple years. So I just think the landscape of middle infielders, if I need to accumulate some chances with, take some chances with upside in the middle infield late, Willy Adames is somebody that I really wouldn't mind having this year. You know, it does scare me a little bit because you watch them a little closer and see more games of theirs than I do. But I think there's enough because of the mixed results. Some of those results are good. And at such a young age, I think, you know, if I'm going to look to just get up to that league average, maybe a little bit more with some upside, I think Willy Adames is not a bad end game play.
He certainly has upside. Another aspect of risk that comes with Adames is the Rays are trying to compete this year. I understand they won a ton of games last year, and you know, people were like, well, weren't they trying to compete last year? Of course they were, and they were also trying to develop some of their young pieces as well. Adames, though, is not necessarily cemented into a full-time shortstop role. Daniel Robertson is very good with the glove. They easily could play him over there. They have Christian Arroyo, like I mentioned before, who they could easily play as well. My point being is Willy Adames is going to get the first crack at the starting shortstop job. He's going to, you know, obviously have a pretty good stolen base floor, like you mentioned, because he always has. But it'll only take a little bit of time, maybe a month or two, before the Rays would kind of turn the page just for a little while and, you know, send him down or possibly bench him before, you know, just to be able to kind of get him right. Again, though, like, I love Adames, and, you know, this very well could be a season where he turns into one of the top, you know, shortstop or middle infield options in fantasy, because I do think he possesses that upside. At the same time, though, I think we should wait a year. That's my kind of, you know, stance at this moment in time. I hope I'm proven wrong, though.
The only thing I would say about Adames is I love the Rays. You know, I've rooted for the Brewers for years.
Sweet.
So I love the Rays. My brother lives in Tampa. I've been to their stadium multiple times. The thing that happens here, though, is they have to balance the fact that they want to compete, but they're in like a ridiculously difficult division to try and compete in. So, you know, even though they certainly could compete for a wild card, I'm not saying that they couldn't. I'm just saying that they need to balance, as always, which Tampa Bay has been good at this for years. They have to balance both trying to, you know, get some value going out forward with how much they want to compete. And I think Adames is going to get sort of the benefit of the doubt. I'm trying to check right now. It seemed to me like Adames was a lot better last year towards the end of the season. He batted .305 in the second half. He batted .341 in September and that little chunk of October that they play. And yeah, he batted .318 in August. I mean, I don't know. It just seems to me like I actually, surprisingly enough, I think you're a little more negative on him than I am. I think he proved enough last year in the second half that I think Daniel Robertson, I love Daniel Robertson, by the way. High OBP guy. I love him as a reserve. I think, you know, he's listed as an infielder, outfielder, so he can play a little bit of everywhere. I think he could play first base even if necessary when G-Man.
Mini Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, Mini Ben Zobrist is right. And but the point being is that I'm quite a bit higher on Adames than you are. Matter of fact, you know, the more I look at it, I wanted to confirm this, and I just did. With as good as he was in the second half last year, you know, and especially when it's good at the start of the second half, sometimes September numbers, when all the call-ups are up and you're playing, you know, quad A pitchers or less than that, a lot of the time that doesn't impress me much. But I'm pretty pumped up by the August numbers for him as well. So I'm bigger on Adames than you are this year.
Yeah, August and September were really good for him. 56 and 61% ground ball rates, though. Like, that's part of my fear with the power. That's like Christian Yelich home run to fly ball rates. You know, 28% home run to fly ball rate in August. That's, you know, let's go off Adames. So I think we've talked about it enough. Mike Zunino is the next player we'll talk about for the Rays. You know, talk about somebody who has just had a mixed bag throughout his career. The one thing that we can count on with him is he's going to strike out at a very consistent and high rate. I I think, though, I mean, despite his strikeout problems, the Rays just don't give a shit. They don't. They are willing to eat the strikeouts because he's pretty good defensively and he has power. And the Rays just flat out have had, I mean, they had Wilson Ramos last year and part of the year before. But other than that, you know, they really have not had great catchers throughout their history. Zunino kind of offers them something that they've just never had, somebody that really brings some power to the plate, no pun intended. While despite they don't really need him for batting average, though, they have other guys on the team that make a ton of contact, like Joey Wendell, Matt Duffy. They don't need him for contact. They need him for some home runs. And that's, I think, what they grabbed him for fantasy purposes. He's not somebody that has really been popular. I can look through his ADP here in a second. But I mean, I just don't really see a reason not to maybe take a flyer on him late in drafts. He's in a pretty good division. Obviously, you know, Fenway Park has a pretty nice green monster. He can hit the ball over. Yankee Stadium's in there. Rogers Center's in there. I mean, going as the 243rd overall pick, I don't mind it.
Well, especially, I mean, if you're in a two catcher league, it's a no brainer that obviously somebody's gonna own him in a two catcher league for sure. The high K rate, you know, sneaking up towards 40% at times in his career, is the part that sort of frightens people. The other thing I would note is, to keep going with the point I made earlier, he had a 268 BABIP last year and a 259 OBP. You know, he has shown signs at various stages. You know, he had 251 as recently as 2017. I think that I like him more in a straight batting average league than I do an OBP league, just because, you know, his walk rate appears to be going the wrong way, by and large, over recent seasons. But again, this is your post-hype guy. I mean, when Zunino came up, he was one of those guys when he was a prospect, everyone said, boy, if he can just swing and miss a little bit less, we could really be in for something special. People thought perhaps you could get a 30, 35 home run year out of him if everything fell right. And yet his high at the majors right now is 25. So it's just really a matter of building your team the right way and sort of knowing what you want to get from an end game play. And catcher is always going to be really, really tricky this year. So if you think you're short on power and you're unlikely to get anything else from the catcher position anyway, then I think he can play into your plans. But I think you need to see how your draft unfolds.
I will say, I mean, Zunino, I like catchers as they age. I think that somebody that has a really high prospect pedigree going through the minor league system that kind of disappoints at the beginning of their career can always find a way to remedy that just by, you know, getting better year in and year out. Catcher is, by and large, the toughest position for fantasy at this day and age, and just in general. You know, it's hard for catchers to learn the position because they have to deal with five different starting pitchers, a whole reliever core. They also have to, you know, kind of consistently, you know, get their hitting work in as well. So Zunino, while he will never be a batting average asset, he definitely has power. And while the power might not outweigh the batting average deficiency, he still is somebody that I think can just kind of help your team, especially with catcher being as bad as it is. The catcher landscape helps Mike Zunino's outlook, in my opinion. Let's talk about the old Brewer, G-Man Choi. 280 with 9 home runs and 168 at-bats against righties last year, 372 on-base percentage. He's going to play against righties, flat out. I mean, he's going to get the green light against righties. I think that that will equate to a, you know, pretty decent year for AL only owners. Deep league guys can, especially if you have daily moves where you can kind of put them in whenever they're facing a righty. I think that he's a pretty good player. Really good hitting power metrics. I just don't see a reason not to have him as an end game flyer, especially in AL only formats. Normal 12 team leagues, obviously not. I mean, even 15 teamers, I don't really think that he's viable there. But in your deeper formats, AL only, I think Choi is legit.
Well, very impressive in the fact that all the stops that he's had in the minors since 2010 or the majors, he's never stayed in the same stop for more than 13 games with having less than a 10% walk rate. Matter of fact, almost all of his walk rates are up over 11 and a good bit up over 11% at that. So that's very likable. And by the way, I mean, we hate to say this, especially old guys like me, but like, if he stays under 25% for the K rate, that's not really that bad anymore for a power hitter. I would say this. I had this idea in my head that maybe there was a ton of power potential here, and I don't know if I really buy into that as much. He never had more than 15 home runs at any spot at any stop in his career, and he's never had more than 18 home runs total between multiple stops in a year. So I don't know exactly how much upside there is potentially here. You seem to like some of the power metrics more and looked at it from a different angle than I did. When players have like a bit of track record, and you know this guy's 27 years old, so he's got a bit of track record going at this point, I tend to rely on that more than some of the other metrics, which can fool you because if he makes a little swing adjustment, perhaps it'll work. But, you know, he had some clutch hits last year. I know he had a grand slam as a Brewer last year. So, you know, 357 OBP, you can do a lot worse than that if you're looking for somebody that you need as a fill-in in your corner spot or as a fill-in for a first baseman. So he'll go. You should go in all of the sort of NFBC leagues where they go that deep. Otherwise, at the least, if you're in a smaller league, I think you should keep him on your radar and see exactly how it runs. And if he's running in a good streak, so be it. So, and again, this is a deep organization. So, and they didn't give up a whole lot to get G-Man Choi, which is something I remember as well. But the point being is now at this point, we've got to see he's going to get his sort of first real crack at playing at least a large chunk of games against right-handed pitching, and we'll have to see how it goes. He'll be a late game play. I can't imagine that his ADP is anything sterling, to say the least.
It's in the 500s. I'll just say that.
The 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide, the Fantasy Benefit, is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market, with featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and Fangraphs, and many more. You will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position, and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide called The Fantasy Benefit today.
The one of the bigger risks with Choi, especially if you do draft him in those AL-only formats, is I would be ready to kind of have the trigger on the drop button just in case things do kind of go south for him. He also cannot break the team out of camp. You know, the Rays might decide to go with a higher upside play, you know, maybe somebody like Nathaniel Lowe. Joe McCarthy is on their 40-man roster, so they could just use him and then throw somebody else at first base, somebody who we're about to talk about, actually. You just never really know where they might go. So Choi, as of right now, is somebody you could use as an end gamer, but you never know, like, you know, for the rest of or at the beginning of the season, whether he's going to be somebody that even makes the team. Talking about somebody that's been inconsistent in their time, Matt Duffy, I want to spend about 15 seconds on this. He has a high batting average floor, injury inconsistency throughout his career, a couple stolen bases, AL-only guy about it.
Yeah, I mean, there was some excitement on him going into some recent seasons because it looked like he was going to start at shortstop for the Rays there for a while, but injury stuff kept him from ever getting really that full-blown shortstop eligibility that that we coveted there for a while. You know, he's already 28 years old. He's sort of when he plays, he's sort of not-going-to-hurt-you guy. And can chip in slightly in all the categories, but he's never been somebody who can carry you in any one category.
Yes. Let's talk about Yandy Diaz for a second. Yandy Diaz, whichever way you want to talk or pronounce his name. But somebody that really has been polarizing, especially since the deal that brought him to Tampa Bay. Jake Bowers obviously was shipped off to Cleveland. I thought that the Rays were going to get Edwin Encarnacion in this move. Didn't happen. They also lost CJ Cron. So with the addition of Avisaíl Garcia, if I can pronounce all that together, and Yandy Diaz, it really kind of creates a unique situation for the DH/first base, even outfield roles. Yandy Diaz, as of right now on Roster Resource, is not penciled into the Rays starting lineup or even as a bench guy for them. Right now, they have him in the minor leagues. But the Rays, according to multiple sources that I've read and according to a lot of trusted resources that I've seen as well, have found something that they can do with his swing that can create the insane amount of power that he's had throughout the minor leagues, not in home runs, but just in bat speed, exit velocity, barrel percentage, stuff like that. They think that they can change that and make it something that does result in more home runs and doubles and extra base hits, etc. What are your thoughts on Yandy as of right now? Because really, when you look at draft costs, he's still going outside the top 400. I don't really see a reason not to maybe grab him and see what happens, because Jake Bowers was a part of their a really big part of their team this year, and they gave him up for Yandy. So I just don't see an avenue where they don't play him the majority of the season.
Well, the problem that I have with Yandy Diaz is that the Rays have been so protective of time schedules as far as when they're going to reach free agency and protecting the extra year. Me and Matt Thompson have talked about it ad nauseum about how they have this tendency to keep players down far longer than they need to be kept down. So that scares me a little bit with a loaded roster, wondering exactly when he's going to get called up. I share some of the excitement that you are mentioning, because the Indians used him to fill in at third base as people were recovering and stuff before, at the starts of seasons the last couple of years. And he's got an unbelievable cannon for an arm, by the way, literally a 70 grade arm. And he runs pretty well, even though he doesn't really know how to steal yet, per se.
Not a great fielder, though. He's not defensively, he's not the best.
No.
He has versatility, but he's not the best.
Correct. And so, but the arm is there. I mean, there's stuff to like about him as a player, and there's stuff to like about him in his profile. And as you mentioned, one of the biggest things to like about him is they were willing to get rid of Jake Bowers at the expense of bringing in Yandy Diaz. So that tells you that they see something in him, because Jake Bowers is a sleeper darling to this day for a lot of people. As he goes over to Cleveland and tries to chisel out some at-bats in the outfield or what have you. So I don't know. I don't trust the depth of the roster versus his service time possibilities at this point. So I guess I'm a doubting Thomas when it comes to exactly what we should expect out of Yandy Diaz this year. So maybe that's something that's helped keep his ADP down to this point. So, but if he gets a chance and he looks good, he's somebody that I certainly would really want to be aggressive in my fab in during the season, as far as if I thought he was getting hot in the minors and this was starting to translate into a good spot for him to come up with the Rays. I don't see him breaking camp. I can't see that happening.
He might not, but skills are greater than roles, and I think Yandy Diaz has the skills to be a really good fantasy asset. And mind you, I'm obviously baking in him making a change to his swing. I just think that that's a given at this point. If the Rays grabbed him, they obviously know that they can do something to change his output. And based on how hard he hits the ball, and I mentioned barrel percentage. He doesn't have a high barrel percentage because he doesn't hit a lot of balls out of the park. But his hard hit percentage was 50% in a short stint in 2017, 44.4% last year in a very short stint as well. But he's a very good hitter too. I mean, he's one of those high contact guys, 83% contact rate last season, .312 batting average and over 100 at bats with Cleveland. I think that there is a lot of potential upside here, but again, it's just potential. He's an end game pick though. Let's go to the pitching side here and try to make it quicker than the offensive side. We try and keep this a little bit shorter. Blake Snell, Obviously, AL Cy Young Award winner, stud. I love him. I think Blake Snell has every bit of, or has every reason to be taken as high as he's been taken. Right now, he's a top 30 pick in NFBC. I think that that's well worth it. All of his adjustments, I think, are going to continue. He might not be quite as good as he was last season, but I have nothing negative to say about Snell. I think that he's a stud. What about you?
Yeah, I see. It's just a matter of how you want to build your staff in a way. Just because there's some people who prefer, if they're drafting an ace, to have somebody who's got a little longer track record. I can see both sides of it. I absolutely love the skill set. The skill set's amazing. I love how young he is. I love that, the Rays actually gave him a chance and didn't make him spend too much more time in the minors than they already did. So I think the sky's the limit. You're talking about somebody with an 11 K per nine and he wasn't even hitting his full stride yet for the whole full season.
17% swing strike rate in the second half. And he upped his first pitch strike percentage as well, up to 60%. That's like the one problem with him is his walks and the first pitch strike rate. But even that really improved in the second half. Sorry, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. And the only thing I would say is, like you said, there's going to be a slight regression. His xFIP last year was 3.16, while his ERA was 1.89. And the only thing I can really see on that is I can see the 88% left on base percentage. Seems like a little bit higher than we usually see. Although guys with this unique skill set that he has, maybe that helps create it. Some of those guys knuckle down when they get runners on base. I love Blake Snell. I have no problem with him being my staff ace. It's just curious because now I see him sneaking in some drafts up to the fourth, fifth, or sixth starter off the board. And that's when I start to wonder if maybe I would like a little bit more track record behind him.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I would not take him as a top five starter right now. I think that he's probably a top 10 guy, just based on my thoughts on things. I mean, Scherzer, DeGrom, Sale, Kluber, Verlander, Nola. I think that those guys are definitely in front. Maybe he's the seventh guy, eighth.
Garrett
right Cole. Now, he's going as the seventh. I think I would take Snell over Cole.
That's certainly, like I said, we're comparing Cadillacs now. I mean,
yeah, at that point, yeah.
You can't really go wrong. They both have unbelievable upside. So,
all right, let's move on to Charlie Morton. The Rays nabbed him for a 2-year deal, if my mind serves me right, with an option, I believe. I'd have to look at the deal, but either way, they grabbed him this year off of free agency, and his first half last year was tremendous. 2.54 ERA, 1.11 WHIP. He did that in 16 starts, 96 innings pitched. The stuff is still there. I mean, 96 mile an hour velocity in the first half of the year, 13% swinging strike rate, and 11.5 strikeout per nine. The second half wasn't as good, but when you look at the xFIPs or the expected ERA that I like to look at on Baseball HQ, he was a 3 ERA in the first half, 3.6 ERA guy in the second half. Both halves together were still just masterful, top 30 starter worthy, and probably pushing it to the top 25, top 20 level. I will say injuries have been a big thing for him. The last couple of years, he's been somebody that's had on average about 25 to 27 starts each year, 30 starts last year. But I still think he had to get some shoulder stuff done. He feels, I've listened to multiple interviews with him, and he seems to be, I like to kind of read through tea leaves and not listen to what guys actually say. I like to listen to how they're saying it and what their reactions to certain questions are. And it just seems to me like Morton's somebody that really understands his body and understands what he is to this point, and understands what he can offer to the team, and not just in terms of actual stats, but also for the other young pitchers on this roster. So I think overall he's a really strong play for this season still. He's probably not going to be as good as last year, but top 115 pick, I think having him as a starting pitcher 3 or 4 for you is well worth the price at this point. I think that he's certainly somebody that is, even if you get him for 150 innings, is going to be well worth it. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think Morton is a really strong and stable player at this point, despite the fact that he's going to miss some time.
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect a ton of innings. Last year was 167, which, certainly looks like a career high. And it matters to me how you feel about some of these extraneous things that we don't always think about. He took sort of a deal. He cut Tampa a deal because one of his homes is in Tampa. He actually lives across the street from one of my longtime friends now, who calls him Charlie on a regular basis and knows the whole Morton family. So anyway, I think he's coming in a decent spot. He's been pitching in the AL already. He's pitched some high leverage innings. He pitched at a park that, you know, has sort of weird dimensions when he was down in Houston. The biggest thing in the Charlie Morton story is that he had that velocity bump that, you know,
with Houston.
Late in his career. And, you know, it always seemed kind of odd to me, and I sort of furled my brow at it and said, boy, that seems weird. Seems like that could regress at any time. But he's just been so much more effective. You talked about catchers earlier, about how they often blossom later in their catching career. Well, pitchers don't usually find velocity and blossom like this. Usually it's a matter of, like, finding, fine-tuning control or something like
command,
that.
Yeah, finding pitcher. A sinker and a curveball that you can hit the corners with and finessing your way out of it.
Yeah, so it's just the story itself has always kind of scared me, but I really like the position that he's in. I really like the Rays this year, and I really like the fact that people seem to be letting him slide down a good way to me. You said a number four or number five starter. Another thing Matt Thompson and I have been discussing is sort of this punt ace strategy this year. And sure. If we're going to use a punt ace strategy, if you're going to get two or three guys after the aces, I think Charlie Morton's a guy that that I would definitely look to in that scenario.
Yeah, he certainly could be one of the top guys on that list. And that historically has been one of my strategies is to actually even like last year, Garrett Cole was the guy that I really ended up going with and putting a flag in as my ace that I was going to continue to grab. And it obviously worked out. Blake Snell was a big guy for me last year as well. Every year there seems to be a strategy for that. Also, just, you know, side tangent, I like Michael Perez behind Mike Zunino as well, just the lefty backup catcher. We didn't mention much on their bench, but I like Michael Perez. Tyler Glasnow, everybody, me included, really loved what happened when he came to the Rays from the Pirates last year, which the Rays, I mean, if we're being honest, they really fleeced the Pirates in that deal for Chris Archer. They got Shane Baz as the player to be named later. Obviously, Austin Meadows came to the Rays in that deal. I think that that's a complete steal for them, but I digress. Glasnow in the first half in a relief role with Pittsburgh had a 3.35 expected ERA. And, you know, versus a 4.4 actual ERA. The whip was a problem, 1.3. But when you look at the second half, and, you know, really from August on with the Rays, he had an incredible month of August, 3.23 ERA, 0.85 whip, 11.2 strikeouts per nine with a 13% swing strike rate to validate it. Still ended up having some issues with walks, but not nearly as much with the Rays. 2.9 and 3.2 walks per nine in the 2 months that he was starting with the Rays. And I think starting is the biggest key word here with Glasnow because they were using him exclusively at starter. And he was starting to stretch out in games as the season wore on. So while the end of the day results weren't that different, because he did kind of struggle a bit in September. Really, he mainly struggled in one or two starts. It just really hurt the overall month at 5.4 ERA. But when you look at the two first half and second half, it really isn't that big of a difference. But the Rays are using him as a starter. He's going to be a starter coming into this year. It seems that they found a way to command his pitches better. Obviously, with the Rays pitching coaches being a big, you know, strong driving force in that. All this to say that I think Glasnow going at 172nd right now in drafts is a complete steal. I can see him taking a very large leap this season and even being a top 40-ish starter candidate when it's all said and done. Maybe even higher if things really played out for him right. So he has a really nice range of outcomes, and I think Glasnow is one of the guys that I'm definitely going to plant my flag into for the season, especially at pitcher, because of just the pure upside alone. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't mind that take at all. By and large, I concur. The biggest thing for me with Glasnow is the landscape of pitching is falling back towards him, meaning that obviously being a younger guy, he doesn't have a ton of innings yet that he's logged at the major league level in any given season. Well, if he gets to 140 innings and they're high quality, good K per nine innings, well then so be it. If he ends up getting shut down at the very end of the season, if they happen to fall out of the wild card race with, you know, 3 weeks to a month left in the season, well, so be it. The quality of the work and the skill set versus the role, as you mentioned earlier, leads me to think that Glasnow is a darn good investment this year. I already own him as the last pitcher on my staff in a league that drafted way back at the end of last season. And I'm excited about his potential. I think he's somebody that even in shallower leagues, if he lasts to a reserve draft or what have you, boy, I think he'd be a great upside play to be able to take in even shallower leagues.
The rest of the first off, the Rays didn't really go with much. They had Blake Snell on the rotation, Nathan Eovaldi for a portion of last season. Once they grabbed Glasnow, he was one of their rotation guys. But after that, they really didn't have starters. Ryan Yarbrough and Yanni Chirinos, who are penciled in as the 4 and 5 starters for this year, they obviously logged significant innings last year. But most of the time, not necessarily most of the time, but probably half the time, they came in after the opener or the quote-unquote opener. So while they are penciled in to log innings this year, and I think they will, and they'll log pretty decent innings as well, I don't think they're necessarily worthy of us talking or going extensively on them for this exercise, but they are some of the guys that are right now probably going to log a good amount of innings for them. Anthony Banda, Jose De Leon, and Brent Honeywell, all listed with Tommy John surgery from last year, are on their way back. Honeywell being the most exciting of the three. I will say all three arms, though, are unique in their own ways. They're really not great 2019 plays, but certainly in keeper and dynasty leagues, which I'm sure, you know, Matt and Justin will kind of dive into, they all have significant value at this point for different reasons and different size formats, etc. As far as the relievers go, we can talk about a couple guys. My biggest guy I want to talk about is Diego Castillo. Averaged almost 98 miles an hour with velocity. Just an absolute fireballer who did get a good amount of opening innings with them, but pretty good ground ball tilt. Had a 3.18 ERA last year, and it was completely validated by a 3.3 expected ERA as well. Really good strikeout numbers. He does have lapses in first pitch strike rate, which his 48% is probably among the league worst. So his 2.9 walks per nine is probably a fluke. He probably is more of a 3.5 to 4 walks per nine guy. But when you're looking at Sergio Romo being gone from this team, I think Castillo could get the first crack at the closer job. And at 25 years old, I certainly think that he's well worth the price, which is pretty much I think it's non-existent at this point. Right now he's going outside the top 500. So, I mean, you can get him for free, a really good ratios guy even if he doesn't get saves. What's your thoughts on the relievers?
Well, I guess my thoughts are that you've got to adjust now to what this landscape is. And, you know, like in these 50 team draft and holds that I have coming up, a guy like this could really be helpful if you need a guy who's going to really help your ratios and do you a favor in a non-traditional role that you can get exceptionally late in a draft. I liked Alvarado a lot last year as well, and I sort of kept thinking that they were going to go to him as a traditional closer last year, which certainly didn't happen. They went more with Sergio Romo, and then every time I would take Alvarado out of my lineup for a week, he would get a save or two here or there. I think this is what the new reliever landscape is, like it or not. You either have to really invest in one of the few sure guys that's out there, or you better roll the bones on 3, 4, or 5 guys in some of these leagues. And, this Diego Castillo seems like an excellent candidate to be one of those shutdown middlemen that can really help your team more than you expect.
Alvarado is definitely going to get a couple saves this year. He's a fireballer lefty and in the back end of the Rays bullpen. So I certainly think he's almost like the Jake McGee of this Rays generation, somebody that is going to probably not get the role to himself at any point, but somebody that definitely is going to be used in high leverage situations against lefties like he was last year. Chaz Rowe, a really strong slider, probably one of the best pitches in baseball, in my opinion, and obviously I'm biased, but he's probably not going to land saves, but also a high-quality reliever back there. And then Ryan Stanek, the Arkansas product. I believe he was a second round pick, maybe late first, and he ended up having a 2.98 ERA and a 1.09 WHIP, and was really a pretty decent opener for the Rays last year. He could end up with a couple of saves. He was for a couple years there, he was thought to be the closer of the future for them, but I don't think he necessarily will land saves, but he does have a lot of those traits that you would want. Righty, high velocity, does have a pretty significant walk rate, but a 16% swing strike rate, just high strikeout numbers and, high strikeout velocity. He could fall into saves at some point, but regardless, he does have pretty decent skills and could help anybody really in this landscape in fantasy baseball. So that's my thoughts on the reliever core. Do you have any other thoughts on that?
No, I guess I just want to mention briefly that the Tampa Bay staff as a whole, they have the three starting pitchers that we mentioned. Everyone else, you're going to need to be pretty format specific to know exactly what you can get out of them and how much you want to use them. They always used to have the acronym that was SPARP in head-to-head leagues, starting pitchers that double as relief pitchers. Well, now all of a sudden you get these NGS SPs, they're non-game started, but they're still starting pitchers, and you get that. Yeah. You get that out of. I think Jake Faria is another candidate that could have a bounce back year. But anyway, you can get that kind of thing out of Jake Faria. You can get that out of Ryan Yarbrough. Yarbrough helped a lot of teams last year, and I noticed there's a lot of people who really like Yonny Chirinos too. So the Rays are always this quiet source of fantasy value that you don't necessarily see it coming unless you do your diligence and you look into it.
Yeah, Jake Faria, I didn't mention, and we can spend a second on him, but yeah, he is certainly not as bad as he was at times last year. Somebody that definitely could find a role with this team. And Jalen Beeks, the Red Sox traded Beeks over to the Rays for Nate Eovaldi last year, and Beeks showed some pretty decent signs in his limited time with the Rays. So I think Beeks is a name to kind of file away as well. Andrew Moore is obviously rolling around in there from the Mariners. There's a ton of guys on this team, especially in the pitcher end. I think the only 100% for sure locked in rotation arms are Snell, Morton, and Glass now. Outside of that, you could be seeing a mix and match every single day, and in some areas it could give you a significant value based on what their role is and whether they're an opener or whatever they're doing, like Chuck mentioned. In other scenarios, they could just be guys that really don't hold a lot of value and are just question marks on from a day-to-day basis, and really don't hold a lot of value for us. So it kind of all depends on who it is and what format you're in. But let's wrap this up, Chuck. Once again, you all let everybody know where you can be reached and everything.
Yep. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached on Twitter at Just Chucking It. I'm getting ready for these drafts that are coming at me fast and furious. Fortunately, I got a mock and a couple of real drafts behind me already. I can always be reached. If you have any questions, I'll give you my honest, wholehearted opinion. And I'm never short on opinions. Everybody knows that. So anyway, thanks for all the support that FWFB has gotten. And please remember, if you're going to buy a draft guide online, the fantasy benefit that we just churned out is a really, really great resource.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And my nickname for you, Chuck, is Ranty Chucky. You're like 100% every single, one night a week, you just go on some type of random rant. And it's always very entertaining, if nothing else. You might infuriate me at times just from my, from my bed at 3 a.m. when I'm reading something on my phone. But regardless, it's always entertaining. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, my friend.
Anytime. As far as the draft guide, I echo exactly what you said. This is the second year we've done it as a site, and it is tremendous. We've already done really well in terms of getting the content out to people, and I urge you to get it. It's going to be something that is static. It's going to continuously be updated as the preseason and spring training rolls around. Not a lot of places do things like that, so this is a quote unquote magazine that is going to help you and be a significant tool to your drafting, all the way up until draft day for you and throughout spring training. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Warner FWFB, and yes, just please do check out the draft guide. This season I'll be writing for Fangraphs and Baseball HQ as usual, so check it all out. And for Chuck and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts.